Hi there, my name is Adam Shaw, and welcome to the YM Leadership Podcast, where we're here to educate and engage apostolic leaders just like you as you lead the next generation of Oneness Apostolics. Well, happy new year, everybody. This is our first episode of 2023, and we want to say thank you for the support that you gave us last year. And you can continue to give that to us this year by simply listening to these episodes and sharing them with your friends. That's honestly all we ask, is that we can get apostolic leadership content in the hands of as many student leaders and student pastors as possible. Because, especially because of this episode, because this episode is going to be super relevant to most of you that are serving in youth ministry in the United Pentecostal Church. We're talking about bivocational youth ministry. And our guests today have a lot of youth ministry experience, but they don't do this as their full-time paid employment. They're called into ministry, they're licensed ministers with the United Pentecostal Church. And one, Daniel Phillips, has a large family, and you'll hear about his career in a moment. And another, Jordan Ansley, has only been married a couple of years, and he's launching into a brand new career as well as jumping into a new role in his local church. And so they're here to talk about the tensions and the challenges that come with bivocational ministry. But I want to let you know, they're going to challenge you to become better and inspire you to do more for the kingdom. And the other reason why we got Daniel and Jordan on the show is they're the hosts of The Youth Room, a podcast put on by UPCI Youth Ministries just for students and young adults. So if you never heard of The Youth Room, this is the big plug for The Youth Room. It's an amazing show dedicated to teenagers and young adults. And to let you know what that show is like, we have included a full episode of The Youth Room after our conversation is concluded. So you can just keep listening. And if you love what you hear, I want you to click on the link in the show notes to The Youth Room and share that with your students and your young adults, because they're going to come alongside your ministry and support you. So without further ado, let's jump into our conversation with Daniel and Jordan. Well, hey, Daniel, Jordan, it's so awesome to have you guys on the show today. Let's just jump right into it. Please, if you could, introduce yourselves. What do you do in ministry? How long have you been involved in youth or student ministry? Whatever the, you know, I'm from the old youth pastor days before before I went student. I don't know if we've got back to youth. I'm kind of out of the loop on that. But what do you do in ministry? How long have you been involved in youth ministry? Just so people can get an idea of your ministry background before we move into the other career and family stuff.
Yeah, I guess the first question is it age before beauty, Jordan?
You go first, Dan. You go first.
All right. So if you're hearing me for the first time, my name is Daniel. The other guy you're going to hear from is Jordan. And we actually get to do ministry together, and we do it at the same church as Adam here. And I've been in ministry really under Adam since 2006. Which is kind of a throwback. That's, if you do the math right, absolutely, depending on when you listen to this, it's either 16 or 17 years ago, which is quite a long time ago. And so I started speaking around that time, helping with youth ministry. Now, currently, I'm the youth pastor at our church, and I've been doing that for, I believe, the last 10 years, which is hard to believe. And so we do that and then serve on our district team here in Ontario. And so that's the main thing, youth pastor.
Jordan, what about you?
Well, and I am the assistant youth pastor at LifePoint, and I've been involved on this youth team for, I think, over 10 years. Adam, you invited me shortly after I received a call to the ministry at a young age to join the youth team and to have a seat at the table. But then more recently, I've moved into this role of assistant youth pastor under Daniel and Ashley, along with my wife, Melody. And of that time, I've been licensed as a minister for about 4.5 years. That's my ministry involvement. Obviously involved in other ways at our church as well, but primarily focused on the youth ministry.
Now, this episode is all about bivocational youth ministry, and you guys fit that bill in that you have this ministry vocation and calling that God shaped, called, and equipped you to do. However, you're also in a situation where due to size of your local church, cost of living in the city, which is, it's, I think it's, we're number four in North America for most expensive city, four or five most expensive city in the entire continent to live in. We're more expensive than chunks of New York and LA. It's really wild. You also have got to do other work to support your life and your ministry. So you guys are licensed ministers. You've got over a decade of Daniel of being in a pastoral role, and Jordan, you've got over 4 years of licensed ministry. You're now in pastoral role, over a decade in student ministry. But what do you guys do to pay the bills? What do you do for full-time employment? And then we'll tack on that any kind of unique family or life dynamics that just kind of impact this ministry that you have.
Yeah, just to give kind of the big picture. So my day-to-day is I'm an elementary school teacher, and so I teach grade 7. It can change from year to year, but typically that's what I do. And so that is kind of my primary role. And obviously we'll probably get into it. And there's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of great things about that in terms of ministry and having a day job. And so I do that. My unique family situation is also that I have 4 kids and they're all fairly young, just like me. So 4 kids, so happily married with 4 kids, and then a teacher, and then youth ministry.
Your oldest is how old, Daniel?
She is 6.
And your youngest is?
2. So, and then there's twins in the middle, yeah.
You got 4 kids between 6 and 2 and elementary school teacher. Now, Jordan, what about you?
Well, first, I just want to say I always like to bug Dan that he must have a hard time relating to anyone else who's just past 30, because somehow he has 4 kids and lives in an amazing home in this sort of real estate environment. It's not common. And I can speak to that because I am the director of operations of a large real estate team here in the city. That's what I do on the day to day. And any sort of unique family dynamics? Well, I've been married for 2.5 years, no kids yet. But as I've heard, it can happen pretty fast. You can go from 0 to 4, just like that. So
just like that.
That's it for me, though. That's my context.
And Daniel, as far as family, your wife is a stay-at-home mom. Obviously, yeah. You got a lot of kids to take care of. And Jordan, your family dynamic is your wife is a registered nurse. Am I correct?
Correct. Yeah.
In our city that we all live in. So we got 2 guys that are involved in youth ministry, and they're doing a phenomenal job. And I'm saying that because I know them. And I see their work. I am their direct report at their local church, and their midweek youth service is competing with the total attendance of our adult Bible study, which is absolutely outstanding. And given the size of our church, that they are running a youth group that is about as large as a good chunk of our churches here in our district. I think that's pretty outstanding. But you've got this unique dynamic environment of young family working full time, and so I guess my next question is, this comes with sets of challenges. What are your top 2 challenges when it comes to doing bivocational youth, student, young adult ministry, and why those 2 particular challenges? Dan, we might as well keep it in the order that we've been talking to. So let's go first with you. What are your top 2 challenges, and why did you pick those 2?
I love going first, because then if he was going to say what I wanted to say, then I don't have to come up with anything else. So that is the perks of, being the number one guy, the youth pastor, I don't have to adapt on the fly or change anything. No, this is the error. This is the order from here on out. Top 2 challenges. The biggest one, and I struggled for a second one, but I do have one. But the first one is definitely time. That is by far the biggest thing, because so much of your time my time in my case is devoted to your job. And teaching is one of those things where you don't have enough time during the day to do the work. Like you have to do work at home so that you have work to do at work. Like it's a really weird, you know, dynamic where you're planning and prepping and doing a lot of that stuff. And so it's just that with family. And so it's finding the time to do the things you want to do and the things you know you need to do for ministry. And so trying to figure out how to fit all of that in. And so I think we'll talk about like how you actually manage that. But that for me is the biggest challenge, is just time and having limited time to devote to ministry. The second thing I would say is energy. Because you pour yourself out in so many different areas, like going from work to, you know, home and having supper, getting the kids ready, and then going to youth service. You know, sometimes like you're there, but you're not necessarily on. Like you're not coming in with a full tank of gas. And so it's having the energy at the end of the day or, you know, in the evening to do those ministry things in the time that's available. And so those are the two biggest challenges, I would say, managing your time and then just your energy levels because of what you're spending your time doing.
Jordan, what about you?
Yeah, I definitely had some similar themes to Dan, overlapping for sure on the number one challenge being time. Really, it comes down to, you know, divided attention and priorities. And we're going to talk about how we solve these challenges in a moment. But like, you've got a full work week, you've got family, you know, family stuff going on, you've got personal goals and aspirations that you have. On top of that, I think what I put down for challenges was a bit unique from what Dan had was availability for special events, camps, conferences, the sort of things that as a youth minister, they might not be, you know, directly under your control, but you want to be involved at that level. You want to be setting the tone for your youth group and showing up at these events and being able to continue to minister to your young people at these events, volunteering at camps, and being available for that is definitely a challenge when you have full-time secular employment.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, just because I know you very well, Jordan, and that is you have the, you know, as a family, your family, your wife also has this physically demanding shift work job where she's working as a nurse. And so you've got all that, you've got that pressure as well, where you're working during the day and then there are weeks where she's working at night. She's working weekends 100%. And then, you know, coming home, getting some sleep, coming to church and, you know, helping you organize youth events, being right there beside you everywhere that she can as well. I think that's probably that's a unique way in which you face that time crunch and that time pressure. Mm-hmm. To the both of you, how have you addressed the challenges that you face doing ministry while having full-time jobs, careers?
I think the biggest thing for me with time and managing your time is planning and being prepared. Like I have to know, you know, what's happening with our youth sermon, you know, series, or like, are the schedules, you know, set, or do we have the volunteers? And more specifically, what are the tasks that I need to do and what's the timeline that I need to do them in? And so it's having a big picture view of here's all the things that need to get done. And then here's the things that I'm responsible for. Okay, I'm preaching this week. And so when I look at my week, you know, where is the time for that? Or these are the people that I need to connect with. Where's the time for that? And so it's knowing what I have to get done and when I have to get it done by, and then looking at, okay, where are going to be the pockets of time? I need to spend this evening doing this, or I don't know, this break at work, like, you know, studying for this thing. And so it's, you know, using your calendar effectively and prioritizing those things just to make sure that you don't drop anything. I think because there's so much going on, you're almost forced to be more organized and a little bit more on top of things, whether you're wired that way or not. And then
can
the
I
other
just
thing,
break in?
Yeah,
I just want to break in for one sec. I want to drill down because I mentioned Jordan's unique challenge in that he's got his wife works shift work, and the two of them are very partnered together in what they do. And I know that you and your wife, Daniel, are very much partnered in what you do. And, you know, your challenge is not shift work and weekends. Your challenge is four kids under the age of six, and ministry doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like that's the big thing that I think everyone, in order, if you're going to have a healthy life with healthy relationships and a healthy family where people grow up and your, you know, your kids, you know, I'm a PK. So where you grow up in a way where your kids don't hate the church, they don't, but they love it. They love that they get to be part of this incredible thing. You've got to find ways to, balance is an awful word, but you got to find the right rhythm of life. Can we just geek out for a second? Because when you come home, you got four kids that need your attention. You got work time management. What do you use to manage your time? How do you manage district? You know, you do director of promotions for Ontario. So your district work, your youth ministry work, and then, you know, trying to take care of your kids and, you know, be a husband that takes care of his whole family and his wife and his home. And what do you do? Like, do you time block? Like, how does that work? How does that work for you? If there's somebody listening right now, they're like, yeah, I need to do the time management thing, but I don't even know how. What do you do?
Yeah. And there's so much there. Like, for anyone listening, like, I'm a big productivity, like self-help, like whatever. Like, I know a lot of that's cheesy. A lot of it's common knowledge, but like, I'll read it all day long, every day. Not necessarily because I need it, but because to me, it's super fascinating. Like, just motivation and willpower and all that, all those different things. But, you know, to really kind of be plain about it, there's two big things. Like, number one is your calendar. And I just use, I don't know, it's called Calendars by Riedel. So a lot of people like Fantastical, but I think having a calendar where you can see church events, you can see time that's blocked off, you can see different practices that you might have to be at, or stuff like this where we're going to record something, like that has to live in one place where you can look at a week if someone wants to schedule something in, or you want to, you know, plan something. Like, you have to have a system that you trust. And so my day-to-day and week-to-week is pretty similar, but you know, special things like this, like, you have to find time for them. And so using a calendar is the biggest thing. And then for tasks, I've jumped around a lot. A lot of people like to use Todoist. It's kind of free and you can do different projects and things like that. Right now, all I use is Notes, Apple Notes on my phone. And I have one kind of note for tasks, and it has all of the tasks, like just any random thing that someone asks me to do just gets on this one master list. And then I will bump that up to the things that I have to do today. And a lot of that, like, I'll look at my calendar and be like, okay, we're going to do, I don't know, this, you know, sermon next Tuesday. And so that gets added to my list, like, to work on the notes and things like that. And so I work from that on a day-to-day basis as to the daily things I do for myself, like spiritual disciplines or reading or exercise. Yeah. That's just a recurring checklist. That's the same things every day. And I try and do all those things for myself. And then there's the daily tasks that I'm going to do today. And I keep a separate one for work. And then just a random list of all of the things that are coming up. And the due dates for those will typically be on my calendar. And so I'll look at my calendar and then I'll move the task up to whatever day I'm going to work on it.
Okay. Now, the other thing you talked about was energy.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the challenge of managing energy?
Yeah, the big thing for me with energy is to kind of monitor it and know, like, you can kind of feel like if you're in a funk sometimes, and like, I'll just realize I have to do something for myself, like just find time away or to do something that I enjoy. And so it's a little bit harder. Like, I think exercise is really key, like just eating healthy if you can, like getting good sleep, like just taking care of yourself first, I think is the most important thing. Like, before we try and, you know, pour out and do other things for other people. Like, to me, Paul is huge when he says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. As a leader, that's my motto. Like, I want to live life in such a way that if someone were to model their life after how I spend my time and how I treat my family and how I take care of myself, like, would I feel like I have led them well? And so sometimes that's too much of a burden, but other times, like, it helps me hold myself to a high standard. But, you know, having a good rhythm, don't take on more than you can handle. Like, it's okay to say no to opportunities. Like, you don't have all the time in the world. And so, the last thing I'll say, and then I'll pass it off to Jordan, but, one thing that I go by is return on investment. So anytime something is requiring time for me, I'm constantly thinking about what's going to be the return. What kind of an impact is this going to have? And if there's big investment for little return, then that's the thing that I say no to, or I try and delegate, or I just cut out, because the things that I'm using my limited time on, I want them to have the biggest possible impact for my ministry or for my family or for my life. And so I'm always thinking about tasks and obligations and those kinds of things in terms of how much time is it going to take away from other things that I know are meaningful and impactful.
I think that's a great point. And we probably will get into this in some of the later questions we have prepped, but I feel like for those in that kind of bivocational space, learning how to say no is really, really, really important. Jordan, what about you? You know, you talked about some challenges. How have you, and I'm, it's cool. We got you both on the show. You're in different stages of life, but you're also different personalities. And so you're going to address the challenges that you have in ministry in maybe a different way. And so let's talk about you.
For sure. Well, like Dan said, you know, the challenges of time, you have to plan, you have to calendar, you have to look at your tasks and be smart about that. You also have to have a routine, you know, a daily routine, weekly routine, monthly routine, things that, you know, they're tasks or habits that you just stack on top of each other and build that routine. You need that if you're going to manage your time. I think, and we'll get into this later, but like, you're never going to be less busy. And so it's not about finding more time or making more time. It's just about managing what you have well. And to do that, you have to plan. But I was thinking about this more, and specifically when it came to like availability for special events and having time and managing time. I come from kind of a unique context because I changed jobs about 9 months ago. And so before that, I was self-employed. I had what I, you know, perceived as total time flexibility and being my own boss and managing my own schedule. And I had this idea at the time that, you know, that afforded me so much more time for ministry. But the reality was, you know, the bills got to get paid somehow. And so I was doing all sorts of things around the clock to just make ends meet. And that actually left me with less time for ministry than I have now, being full-time at one job. As strange as that seems, you know, working full-time hours, 40 hours a week, and being in a director role, I'm available around the clock for situations as they might arise, but I still now have more time for ministry than I did before. So one of the big things for me that afforded me that and makes it so that I can go, you know, to youth camp for a whole week and be at youth convention on a Thursday to help set up and, you know, be available for all sorts of church events that might come up, is because I had a day one conversation with my employer and said, you know, basically, like, here's where my priorities are. I'm very involved with my church. I run youth programs there. I'm involved at a level beyond just our local church. And I sometimes need to be out of the city for extended periods of time. And they, knowing that, brought me on with a high degree of flexibility that, you know, compared to some other employees at the company is somewhat uncommon. Now, granted that it's a real estate team, they do have contractors working for them who are just, you know, their own boss. So it wasn't totally unheard of in the business. It just, for the in-house employees, wasn't totally common. But that was because I had that tough day one conversation. And to me, it was a matter of making a decision that aligned with my priorities. I wasn't going to take that job if they weren't able to, you know, accommodate that, because ministry to me is a priority. Yes, I need to pay the bills, but, you know, the right door will open at the right time. So that was kind of my take on time.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you wanted to add? I know you had a second challenge or another challenge, I believe, in there.
Yeah, I mean, time was overlapping. I think the conversation I had with my employer is what really set the bar and enabled me to make time for district events. The only thing else I would add to like planning is I use a tool. I've tried two tools out for calendaring in combination with like task lists. And those are Morgan, Morgen, and Motion. They're both paid tools, relatively affordable. And they basically combine the idea of a task list and a calendar and let you manage both in one place. For me, I over the years, I've tried so many things for task management. Yeah. I've tried Todoist. I've tried different project management tools. And I've tried calendaring, but my problem now and the reason I switched to this system was I have a work calendar and I have a personal calendar, and one's on Outlook, one's on Google, and I needed something to pull all of that together. And so right now it's Motion.
Now, one of the things that you got to do when you're in ministry, especially youth ministries, you got to find ways to stay sharp. You got to stay creative. Church communication expert, fellow Canuck, Brady Shearer, talks about how, and I'm a huge fan of his. I think he's not apostolic. He's got nothing to do with the United Pentecostal Church. But if you're in youth ministry leadership and you're listening to this, there's a good chance you also do a lot of things with your church's Instagram account. So let's just be real. That's just the way that it is. He's great for church communications, but one of the things that captivated my attention is that he claims that we are undergoing the greatest communication shift in the past 400 years, that what we're undergoing with video, internet, social media is as big as the printing press, and how the printing press has changed and transformed the whole world and how the world accesses information. We're undergoing that as well. And so I've said all that to say this. We're ministering right now to Gen Zs and possibly some older Gen Alphas. And if you're involved in young adult ministry and you're listening to this, there's a good chance you got some younger millennials in there as well. If your church has a separate hyphen ministry or has, you know, hyphens in with your main youth group, you're dealing with a culture that just expects you to be creative and stay sharp and stay abreast on issues. So with all the extra demands that you guys have on your time, how have you managed and you've kind of addressed this a little bit, but how have you managed the tension with family, church, and work obligations? And more importantly, how do you guys stay sharp and creative and connected with the people that you're called to reach with all the demands that you got in your time and your life?
I think like for staying fresh and sharp for me, like a lot of that comes down to reading and just finding books, listening to books. Like I'm a huge audiobook guy. And so in the mornings, like when I'm driving to work, I'm listening to something. So I'm constantly looking for things like to help me grow and stay kind of fresh. The other side of it is with my day job, like I hang out with 11 and 12 year olds for like 6 hours a day. And half the time, like, I don't even know what they're talking about. Like they speak a different language. I will go on fact finding missions.
Judah came in the other day. Judah came in. He's like, "Dad, I don't know about this. It's a little sus." And I was like, "What?
What does that mean? Where does it come from?"
Sorry to interrupt you. I was like, "Sus." He goes, "Yeah, suspicious."
Yep.
I was like, how about we just say, this is the old dad part. I was like, how about we just use the real word suspicious? But anyway, go ahead.
Perfectly fine word. Yeah. And so I'll overhear conversations and like, they'll talk about some person that I don't know about. And so I'll sit at my desk and I'll like, you know, discreetly like Google, like who this person is. I'm like, oh, this is a YouTuber who makes like billions of dollars. And then I'm like, what am I doing with my life?
Mr. Beast is over here buying an island and we're just like slugging it out for peanuts.
If you could fit, you know, four flat screen TVs in this taped duct tape triangle in the middle of the store, they're yours in the next 30 seconds. I'll just learn about things that way. And then I'll have conversations with them and, you know, pretend I know what I'm talking about. But I'll hear things about, you know, different social media platforms or like, you know, what people are concerned about and what they're thinking about. And so to me, that is invaluable. And just knowing, like, then when I go to the ministry side of it and I'm showing up and I'm having a conversation with someone in my youth group, they might not necessarily have the same interests, but I at least know what their environment is like and what their world is like. And so having a sense of purpose, like all the time when you're hearing news or information or what's going on in culture, and just kind of filtering that into how is that impacting the people that I'm leading and ministering to, whether that, you know, you do a spinoff of that to address a particular topic, or it's just knowledge for you when you have those conversations, or, you know, you're counseling someone, you just kind of have your pulse on what's going on.
Jordan, what about you?
Yeah, I think same as Dan, you know, working in a secular environment, you're able to relate a bit to what young people might be experiencing at school. You're able to, on a, you know, midweek youth service, walk up to a kid and compliment them on their drippy fit, and they know what you're talking about. But I think going along with what Dan was saying about reading, like almost like the flip side of it, you need to also kind of cut out the noise, because there's so much demanding your attention every single day. Social media, you know, even like you might sign up for an email newsletter and then you sign up for another one and another one. You got like five of those in your inbox. And if you're, you know, clicking on those all day, you can go down the rabbit hole, eh, Adam?
Yeah,
absolutely. If let me double check. Right now I have, let's go to my email inbox. It says I have more than 99.
And see, you think emails, that you're know, doing yourself a favor by signing up for those.
It's in the neighborhood of 15 to 25,000 unread emails that I
you
have.
You just got a scorched earth policy. Just delete it all. And then tell them, just say, if it was important, email me again. And yes. There you go. Can I just jump in on this, the managing of tension? I know we jumped past it to talking about kind of staying fresh and sharp, but I think for anyone listening, like, that is the real tension of bivocational ministry, is having these different sides of your life where you are one person, right? You have family, you have church, you have work. Yeah. And so there's a couple of things I would just say to that person. And number one is wear different hats. So for me, like, work is work. And so I try and do as much work as I can at work, so that when I come home, I'm not, you know, teacher Dan, I'm dad, or I'm the youth pastor, or, you know, I try and steal time at work for the youth pastor side of things. But I don't want to steal time from the ministry side or from family to do work. And so do as much as you can to be productive and effective at work, and then leave it at work. Okay. When you're with your kids, when you're with your spouse, like, try not to check those emails, like, try not to do that, because that's their time. I'm also salaried. And so the way I look at it is, if I work outside of those hours, then they're paying me less. And I don't want to give anybody time for free. And so be effective at work, and, you know, leave those other things for other times, and recognize seasons. So for me as a teacher, a couple times a year, we have to do reporting. And so you write report cards that go home for students about their progress. Every time that hits, I cannot do it at work. I don't have enough time. As productive and as efficient as I am, there is just not enough time to do it at work. And so I have to do it at home. And every time that hits, it makes the rest of my life chaos, because I'm trying to squeeze in way more work into my regular non-working hours than I ever have to. And so I'm trying to improve on that every single year. I'm still a relatively new teacher, by working on it further and further out. But I recognize that that's a season where there's a due date and a deadline as to when I have to turn those in. And during that lead up, during that time, like, things are just, I'm not going to be as sharp. I'm not going to be as fresh. I'm not going to be as focused. Like, I won't be on top of my game in those other areas, because the work side now has a looming deadline, and it's big, and there's nothing I can do about that. I can't just say, you know, I'm not going to write these. It doesn't work that way. And so just recognize that there's different seasons, but you don't want to get into a place where your work life is constantly overflowing into the other areas. And so when it comes to those seasons, lean on other people. Have a team, have people that can speak on that week for you. Like, that is the best thing you can do if you're a bivocational youth pastor, is start to build a team, get people around you who can do little small things that just kind of takes it off your plate. And eventually other leaders are going to grow up who can do more and more and more. And so you can kind of lean on them. And so that will help you manage the tension as opposed to you feeling like you've got to do it all and, you know, be the hero all the time. Like start to, especially in the ministry side of it, where you have control and you have, you know, leadership and authority and all those kinds of things, start looking for those younger youth who want to get involved or other young adults who you can pull in and can help with the ministry side of it. And if you're in a really, really small church, have your pastor or your assistant pastor come and do something in your youth ministry at a time when your life is crazy. Maybe they do a one-off message and speak directly to youth. Gives them that opportunity, gives you the little bit of a break, gives your young people something different to talk about. Like there's a lot of things you can do kind of to creatively help, you know, manage that life when things get a little bit out of whack.
For sure.
Jordan, anything you want to add? I saw you leaning in there to pipe in a couple of times.
Oh, I agree completely with what Dan was saying about, you know, wear different hats and the fact that when you're not at work, you have to take off that hat. Even for myself, like I mentioned, you know, being in the real estate industry, these realtors, they're working evenings and weekends. And in my role, if a problem comes up, I do have to respond quickly to that. But what I've done is with my work email and we use Workplace by Facebook or by Meta, those two apps, evenings and weekends, I don't get notifications from them. I can open it up, I can see what's going on, but I don't get a notification. If it's an emergency, everyone has my phone number. They'll give me a call, and I'll be able to respond quickly. But I don't need the chatter and the constant noise from those apps in the evenings and weekends. That's how I try to just take off that hat, hang it at the door, and you know, if I need to respond, someone will get a hold of me by another means.
Now, I want to kind of give you guys a platform now to, and we're only broadcasting this to other youth leaders, but I want you guys to give voice, and there may be some pastors, and you know, this could get cut up and shared on social media as well. I want to take the next couple of questions, and I want to give you an opportunity to speak to pastors that have bivocational youth workers on their staff, on their team, and also to speak to young people and their families about kind of the realities of what it means to do ministry in the season of life, in the context of life that you find yourself in. So let's talk to leaders first, and for lack of a better word, to borrow the OG of leadership's famous phrase, John Maxwell, let's lead up a little bit. And what is it that you wish pastors knew about bivocational youth ministry, and how can they support youth pastors and their families in a greater way in 2023?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I would want pastors to know, and I hope this is true about all bivocational youth ministry people, but it's definitely true about me. The biggest thing I would want them to know is that I'm doing my best. That to me is probably the most important thing. I don't take the ministry lightly. That is the call of God on my life. It is more important to me than my job, than anything, is doing what God has called me to do. And so I'm always doing my best. But I also wish I could do more. And that's not more like I wish I had more opportunities to do this and that. No, it's just that due to the limitations of time and energy and obligations, like I'm doing my best with what I have available, but I wish I could do so much more, right? I wish I was able to give more time. I wish I was able to contact more young people. I wish I was able to go to, you know, more football games or whatever. So I'm doing my best and I wish I could do more. And that's what I would want the pastor to understand, right? And so how does a pastor support a youth pastor and their family? Two things, I would say. Number one is be thoughtful and intentional about your calendar. And by that, I mean the church calendar. So if you're a youth pastor, like you're going to be in leadership on some level, probably in your church, like there's meetings that you go to. You're going to be running your own team, hopefully. You're going to have meetings that you go to. You're going to be counseling young people. These are all things that require your time. And so anytime an event gets put on your calendar or you know, there's a recurring thing or whatever, that is taking that time that is really the non-working time for a bivocational youth pastor, right? Like they already do the work and then the rest of the time is theirs and their family. And all those other events are going to be when the bivocational person is available probably, which is their free time or their personal time. And so the more that that gets kind of taken up, that's going to lead to someone being less fresh and less enthusiastic and less energetic because they don't have the proper rest because they feel obligated to say yes to those opportunities. So I'm not saying don't have leadership meetings, don't talk to your youth. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, yeah, look at globally your church calendar and say, okay, how many nights is that person going to have to give up before I ask them to do this other thing? And that's kind of my second thing is just ask before you task. I don't know if that's a clever way of saying that or a dumb way of saying that, but I've said it now and it's on the record. But ask before you task. And so before you say like, I need you to do this, just say, can you, or is that possible? Or do you want me to find someone else? Always leave them the out, like make it easier for the bivocational person to say no, because they feel obligated to say yes. Like that's their role and we serve and we will do anything. But give them the out where they can say, you know what, I really would rather you ask somebody else because I've got this, 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 and this. Because they don't know the season of your work life or, you know, what you've got going on. And so before you just kind of push something onto them because it's part of their role or they've done it before, just ask it in such a way that there's an opening for them to say, now's not the best time, or I'd love to, but I can't. And don't make that an awkward thing where it's like, it comes across as like fully expected that they're going to say yes, and they don't feel like there's any wiggle room to say no. I think that's just respecting of their balance and them being able to kind of, be healthy and wise about it, as opposed to biting off more than they can chew.
Jordan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with everything Dan was saying. I had something kind of on a different angle here for what I wish leadership knew about bivocational youth ministry. This is actually something I spoke at one of our midweek Bible studies on, just the concept that secular work is more than just a means to an end. I feel sometimes, in the context of mentorship and leadership meetings, like Dan was talking about, sometimes it's missed, or it just kind of doesn't quite, it makes the bivocational leader feel like they're sitting on the outside of something when their work and their employment is seen as just a means to an end. But I think God's word is clear that it's worship, that we're to glorify God in our work, and that it's more than just a means to an end. And so sometimes I think just the theological approach that we take to work has an effect on how the bivocational minister perceives themselves and feels their worth as a leader, or their value as a leader, or their ability to contribute as a leader is limited because they're bivocational when we perceive work in that way. Whereas I don't think that that's the picture that Scripture paints. And we know that a lot of the apostles and founders of the early church were, working to earn their keep, making tents and doing whatever they had to do from city to city to support their ministry. So I think just a healthier theology of work in leadership would go a long way in helping bivocational ministers to see the value they bring to the table.
Now let's shift the conversation to students and families. And so if you could, on behalf of, all the bivocational youth, student, pastors, whatever moniker, Sunday school teachers, whatever moniker they hold in their local church, and you could sit down and be like, hey, let me just share with you kind of where, my life's at. And here's what I wish that parents and maybe even members of your youth group knew about the challenges of your life and ministry and all that stuff that we've talked about. What would you say to them? What do you wish they knew?
I think for this side of it, I could say the same thing really probably to this group that I said to pastors, but to put a different spin on it, I think the biggest thing that I feel like families care about and students need that I wish I could do more of is making connections. It's just not having the time because you have your work and you have your own family and you got to lead them. it's hard to find the extra time to go visit a student somewhere or to, I don't know, just go see a basketball game or a football game. Like that's a really, it's a really big thing for a bivocational youth pastor, youth worker, student worker to do, because it, there's just the time allowed for that is so limited. And so they can't make everything, they can't do everything. But the flip side of that is what I would want families and students to know is that when you need me, you know, I'll be there. So I can't necessarily be there at everything. I can't be, you know, when you just want me to, I can't say yes and I can't be at everything. But when you need me, when you're in crisis or you're making a big decision and you need pastoral advice or you need pastoral care, like I will do everything I can within my power to make time for you and to connect with you and be there for you. And so that's really hard for a bivocational youth minister because you can't build a personal relationship the same way. You don't have the time to invest up front in someone to meet with them every week or, you know, just be in their life as much as you would love to. You just can't do that. And so it's hard. And I reiterate this all the time in our own youth group that, you know I can't do that and I wish I could and I do as much as I can, but I want you to know that like I care about you and I love you and I am there for you, right? It's an open door. It's a text or a phone call or like if you're in a crisis or you just need help with a decision, like that's what I'm there for. That's when I'm going to do everything I can to be there for you. And so I think families and students should just understand that, you know, youth ministers and youth workers, they're just kind of one person. They're just limited in that way. But they, because they love you and they're shepherding you and you're God's, you know, people, like they will be there for you when you need them.
Jordan, what about you?
Yeah, I would just want families to know that we're in this together. You know, come to us, discuss ideas, discuss challenges and opportunities. And I think that goes for youth ministry in general, not just bivocational. But, you know, I really, like Dan said, we're doing our best, but we can always use your input and we want to discuss ideas. If you see challenges or there's something that, you know, maybe we're not seeing, let's discuss that. Let's figure it out. And if you see an opportunity that we could really, you know, leverage to take things to the next level, we want to hear about that too. So we're in this together. We're, you know, trying to steward and guide and minister and disciple these students as best we can. And it takes a whole church. It takes the family being involved in that process as well.
And I just want to tack on that. I think that's a great point. Kind of you both kind of brought out is sometimes there can be demands that are placed on youth and student ministries. For beyond the typical programming of you know the spiritual care and the youth service class, whatever it may be in someone's local context. For us, it's a service, and there is this fear that if our kids get bored, they're gonna and there's nothing for that the church provides for them to do. That they're going to then go into the world and they're going to get messed up and they're going to get lost. And so, you know, youth pastors, I need you to really program every week. And especially, I think there is a rural, urban, suburban divide in how ministry sometimes can be accomplished. And we're in an urban context. Our region is our city region is nearly a million people. And the actual, you know, it's called the Golden Horseshoe region is 2.5 million right up next to, I think four plus Jordan, you'd probably know a lot more than I would, you know, the greater Toronto area. And it's the same thing when I travel, you know, and I'm speaking in city churches, they're in cities of millions of people or in regions of millions of people. It's different than when you're in a smaller city of 15 or 20,000 where everybody can get everywhere in 10 minutes. It takes us 20 or 30 to get everywhere. And so sometimes there can be that demand of replace, you know, the temptation to hang out with, you know, their unchurched friends with something to do on a Friday night. Not saying we shouldn't, and we all should have community-based gatherings for our student ministry, but I'm talking about that over-programming of requiring or requesting weekly entertainment-driven, fun-driven events. I just think that's unsustainable. I remember working working retail management while I was youth pastor at our church, and doing public transit. And my 2 days off were our midweek and Sunday.
Yeah.
And how, you know, then trying to do stuff on like a weekly basis with people too, so their lives would be full of fun. I caved to the pressure because I was like 21 years old. I was been married for 12 weeks. Actually, I was youth pastor at 19. Isn't that crazy? 19 years old. I was 19 years old, and I just was like, let's do everything. And burnout can happen at 21 like that.
Yeah.
Like, you just get taken out at the kneecaps. And so I would, to tack on to what some of what you guys have said, I'd say, look, we're going to instill values in your kids because there's no amount of programming that we're ever going to be able to give them that's going to help them fight the temptation that's in the world. At some point, they're going to have to love Jesus and love living a holy life more than they love the pull of the world. Like, it's okay to be bored. It's okay for your kids to be bored. And I think I that's what I would tack on. I would tack on also, I mean, you know, people can hang out without us programming something. That's totally within the realm of possibility too. And so I would add that. I would add that, add along with it. I guess leading up, second last question, the whole point of this is we wanted to paint a very real picture of what bivocational youth ministry is like to set us up for this last kind of question here. I want you to challenge fellow bivocational youth workers that may be holding themselves back. And I know that there are some. Because I've spoken at, I think, youth minister training event three times or so, and I've always had conversations with, at these national events, with youth workers from all around North America, and it seemed like they were waiting for this magical day where they could get paid to do ministry. And that once that happens, then they would fully be invested in the kingdom of God. And then, you know, or they were waiting for them literally, and this is in other contexts, maybe larger districts with larger churches. I've literally heard, I one day maybe when I can, I'm just in transition. I'm just here for a season.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then maybe we can get at a larger church, and you know, then I'll be able to make a real impact. And I think you guys are, through explaining your life challenges, and I've seen the fruit of your ministry. That's why I asked you for this episode. I wanted to see people or talk to people that I actually knew were like doing real ministry and really killing it despite the pressures on their life. I want you to challenge, inspire somebody that is listening right now that may be saying, you know, once I start getting paid for this, then you'll start seeing my A game. But right now you're going to get my beta game because I'm waiting for that stepping stone. They're treating their current season as a stepping stone. What advice, what challenge? Because I think it's possible to have a thriving, anointed apostolic ministry while also being bivocational.
Yeah.
And so what challenge would you have to those that are using their career and their job? Let's just be mean as an excuse to hold themselves back.
Yeah, I don't think that's mean at all. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. Like, I mean, we all want to get paid, right? We want to do this. Who doesn't? but no, like, to be honest, we would love to do ministry full time, right? Jordan and I, like, I think we're both in the same agreement. Like, I'm not passionate about teaching math and writing and spelling, like. Not at all, right? Like that to me is work that I do to get paid. But at the end of the day, I do have to get paid. Like I have to pay bills. Yeah. And so that's why I do it. But I would love to just work for the kingdom and just work for the church and just pastor people and be able to support myself and my family doing that 100%. But I think the challenge for people is to understand that you should wrestle with where God has called you to. So for me, like I'm called by God to where I am right now. I'm not here because I'm getting paid. I'm not here even just because I grew up, but this is just where I feel like God has placed me. I'm not looking to go anywhere else. I'm not waiting for another opportunity. This is where God has brought me. And so if you're sure of that, if you're sure that this is where God wants me to be, then give it your all. You know, make it about God's calling and say, okay, God, if you've called me to minister, if you called me to preach, if you called me to lead young people, how do I do that right here to the best of my ability with the talents that you've given me, with the gifts that you've given me, with the opportunities that are in front of me, the challenges that I might face? How do I do the best that I can? Because, you know, every day that we have is a gift from God, and we've got a mandate, and there's an urgency on, you know, reaching the lost and saving people's souls and keeping kids in the church. Like, there is this sense of urgency that you can't just phone it in. You know, you can kind of like, you can hang back a little bit at work, but like, you don't do that with the kingdom. You don't do that with the things of God. You give God your best and you give God your all. And so I think the true measure of your success, if you're successful right where you're at, is not how big your thing is or, you know, how much money you're getting paid. It's, are you doing the best you can with what you have, with what God has given you right now? Will God give you more in the future? Will God open a different door in the future? Maybe, perhaps he will, but what you're doing right now will prepare you for that. And what you're doing right now is just as important as that is, right? Because it's not about the numbers. It's not about that. It's about fulfilling God's call on your life. And so my challenge to you is, no matter what your context is, no matter how busy you are, ask yourself, am I doing the best that I can right now to further the kingdom of God, to fulfill God's call in my life? And if you're not, you need to do more, because that's not about us just kind of giving you a kick in the pants. That's between you and God, saying, God, you have given me this ministry opportunity, whatever it looks like, you know, however, whatever context it is, God, you have given me this. I am able to serve people with part of my time, not all of my time, but this part of my time, I have this opportunity to be a youth worker, to be a youth pastor. And so don't take that for granted, whatever it is right now. You should cherish that with everything that you have, because that door could close, or something could happen, or God could come, and that would be it. And you'd say, well, I wasted that time. And you never want to say that. You want to be able to look Jesus in the face. And so I thank you for that opportunity. I thank you for those souls. I thank you for that church. And I gave it everything that I could. Did I always see the success that I wanted? No. But at the end of the day, I did everything that I could, and I trusted you. And so if God has given you a vision and a burden, you know, lean into it, no matter how much work or sacrifice. Like, if God's put it inside of you, you might not see it in reality around you, but you start working towards it. A big transition, and, you know, part of the reason we're here, like Adam just did a couple episodes on mentoring and being a mentee. Well, Adam mentored me and Jordan. So we're a product of mentorship. And one of the things that Adam did with our youth ministry is he took it from just kind of social stuff and hangouts and maybe a little Bible study, you know, to a full-blown kind of church service for students and for young adults. And I was a part of that transition where, you know, I was doing a few guitar lessons and stuff, and I wasn't very good. But Adam said, like, we need a band, and like, you own a guitar. and so you are now like the guitar player. And, you know, we have drummers and keyboardists who are, you know, can point it back to, well, Adam needed me. And so, you know, there we were. And so, you know, he just made that happen with what he had, right? And it wasn't the best quality. You wouldn't want to record it. Like, the youth room sucked. Like, just everything was terrible.
We covered up. We had teddy bears painted on plaster walls from the toddler class. And that foundation leaks had caused that plaster to bubble. And so I've never watched a horror movie in my life. I haven't, but I can only assume that the things that would attack you in your dreams and in your sleep are what those teddy bears look like on the 100%. Wall. We covered them up with garbage bags. and so there were days in the trenches, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
I had a flashback there for a second. I was like, oh wow. And because it was the toddler class, the carpet, some kid had, I remember I walked in stains on a Tuesday night. It's somebody had peed on the carpet and it had left a stain between Sunday and Tuesday because it wasn't cleaned up properly. It was, yeah, no, this is before your time, Jordan. It was brutal. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, and so the point I'm trying to make is don't wait until, like, it's the big thing and the big flashy thing. Like, if God says, like, this is the direction you need to take your youth group or your youth ministry in, like, start going in that direction, right? Trust God, do everything you can, you know, don't measure it against anyone else, right? Don't compare yourselves amongst yourselves. Like, don't do that. Just compare yourself to what God has placed in your heart. And are you actively moving that forward? And you will see great things come as a result of just, you know, trusting God with that process.
Jordan, what about you? Let's say you're at another youth ministry training event, and you don't have to drive the rental van back to the hotel because I got food poisoning, and you've got time to, that's another episode for another day. But you have time to sit around, and you're sitting in that networking lunch, and you're hearing people talk about, well, I'm at this small church right now, and it's good. But you know, it's just a season. You know, hopefully, you know, I'm going to be able to go here or go there. If we can move to this city or that city, we'll be able to maybe join one of those other churches and get paid. And then I'm going to have this thriving ministry. What would you say to those individuals?
Yeah, I would take them through the same exercise that our senior pastor, your dad, took us through in one mentorship session years ago. I'd ask them to paint a picture for me what that looks like. What does their week look like in full-time ministry? What does each day look like in full-time ministry? What sorts of things are they doing in that, you know, future season that they aspire to? And then, you know, once they relay that back to me, I would say, okay, so what's stopping you from doing that right now? Which is exactly what Pastor Shaw said to me years ago. And I stammered and stuttered and I didn't have an answer. And he said to me, you'll never be less busy, and you're definitely never going to have more time. You have the same 24 hours in a day now that you will then. The only difference is, you know, some of your priorities might have shifted around a bit. And so once you have that list of the practical things that you would be doing each day or each week in full-time ministry, look at that list and ask, which of those things are things that I'm not already doing? And can I start doing those this week? Or if I can't, are there ways that I can work toward them? Are there ways that I can, you know, start to move in that direction, like Dan was saying earlier? Because it's true, you're never going to be less busy, and you're never going to have, you know, more time in a day. Your priorities might just shift around. So, you know, try front loading some of that and get started on painting that picture of, you know, your future ministry while you're in this season.
You know, before we shift gears and we talk about the show that both of you host called The Youth Room, we talk a little bit about that. I want to, you know, close off this segment with a quote from, and you guys will probably chuckle, my favorite author, Patrick Lencioni. Is that perfect is the enemy of progress. Perfect is the enemy. I say it all the time on my show, The Restorationist, this podcast here. And it's what you guys have presented today. And that is sometimes we uphold this perfect standard of when my life is, you know, this, then I will be able to do that. And we hold our own selves back. You know, when I was listening, Dan, to what you were talking about, and you're saying, hey, God's called you to this moment. Do all that you can with it. And you know what? If you're managing your time well and you're pushing up against what are your natural healthy limits, because we don't want to be unhealthy. We don't want to burn out. We don't want to wreck our families and ruin our marriages and have our kids hate the ministry because we're out of balance. But if you hit up against your natural limits and you go, you want to know what? I'm doing what God's called me to do. But if you're not, then reassess and do better. Do better. You know, I was thinking about, you know, what those conversations would sound like, that, you know, these imaginary conversations that we had to set up this question where people looked at the season they're at as a stepping stone to something better, and how is this, you know, magical, perfect land where they'll finally become effective, how that would sound to the apostles, Jordan, that you referenced, that were so intense and working. I remember speaking to Brother Jesse Fortaleza. He's the first district superintendent of Asian descent in the history of the UPCI, in the Central Canadian District. He's a phenomenal leader. He's from the Philippines, and he was telling me what life was like when he was pastoring in the Philippines. He said, I was on a 4-day fast that I didn't want to be on. I just had run out of food. And I'm walking in the monsoon back from the church, and I'm ankle deep in mud, and I'm sobbing. And because I didn't have food. And I was praying that God would just give me some food so that I could be able to feed my kids. And the Lord miraculously provided. He said it was a package of hot dogs and a chicken, and we were able to eat that for like, I think it was like the next 2 weeks or something like that. It's something that, you know, you and I would probably eat in a matter of days. Mm-hmm. He stretched for 14, and I thought to myself, how would my complaint about my commute sound to a man that literally went, you know, 96 hours or more, or whatever mm-hmm. it was, without food while he worked a full-time job in a country where there was, you know, monsoons and food crises, so he could fulfill the call of God on his life. I think the standard we're challenging all of us to today is, okay, God's called you to this moment, which means that he's called you to this job, he's called you to this season, he's called you to the family you have now, the church you have now, in the life that you have now. How can you maximize the moment you're in? And don't wait for perfection, because perfection is the enemy. It's the enemy of progress. This is great advice, guys. I want to shift a little bit. And before we go, you guys are the hosts of another podcast called The Youth Room. It is put on by UPCI Youth Ministries, except it's not for leaders. It's for students and young adults. Why don't you tell us about the Youth Room? And we're actually going to play a part of an episode, actually a full episode at the end of this for all of those that would like to listen. And this is a way, youth pastors, for you to get a chance to hear about this great resource that's going to come alongside your teaching and your discipleship to support your students and young adults. It's apostolic. It's going to reinforce our doctrine, our values, our lifestyle, and it's going to come right into the earbuds of your students and young adults on their way to school, on their way to work, or whatever else they're doing. They've got an apostolic podcast just for them. So, Daniel Jordan, thank you for being on the show today. It's been so awesome. Before we go, set up the Youth Room and set up the episode that we're about to play for the audience.
Yeah, we appreciate that. We love doing the Youth Room. It is so much fun. And our big thing is we are youth pastors, right? We're in youth ministry. And so we're doing this podcast for young people, but we're not there to replace you, right? We're not their youth pastor, but we are trying to create a resource that we come alongside you and we address some of those topics and those conversations from an apostolic worldview. Our identity, our beliefs, our relationships, all the things that you wish you could teach on and preach on like all the time, but you just have limited opportunities to do it. We're dealing with those topics and those issues and those things that the young people are wrestling with, and we're really pushing the application. We want there to be biblical literacy so that you know everything we're doing. It's principle-based. It's from the Word of God. But from that biblical context, we want to apply it to the lives of young people. How does this actually impact their day-to-day lives? You know, whether they're a young adult and they're just starting their first job, or they're choosing a school to go to, or you know, they're dealing with things in high school, like whatever those things are, we want to make sure that every episode applies to their life, helps them to be more like Christ, helps them to be more spiritual, grow in their relationship with God. And we try to have as much fun doing it as we can, right, Jordan?
Oh, yeah. We poke fun at each other. We have some laughs. It's always a good time. And we do a monthly episode. And we just finished up a series on the fruit of the Spirit, 3 parts, to finish off season 2. But I believe the episode we're going to feature, you'll hear it in just a few moments, is from the middle of season 2, episode 5, on how our relationships shape us. And all the other, you know, youth workers out there, bivocational youth workers, full-time youth workers, we talk a bit about a young person's relationship with their pastor, with their youth pastor, and leaders in their church as well in part of this episode. So give it a listen. And if you enjoy it, pass it on to your youth group. You can, you know, point them toward the Youth Room podcast, where every month they can check out a new episode as we start season 3 in January.
Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show. So for those of you that are listening, don't hit stop, don't hit pause, don't exit out of your podcast app, don't swipe up and shut the app down. Stay tuned. We want you to hear this episode that's coming up. We're not going to make you go to the show to listen to it. We're going to just add it right on to the end of this one. And we want to give you an opportunity to hear this incredible resource sponsored by UPCI Youth Ministries that is for your students and young adults. And if you love it, if you're like, man, this is going to be great for our young adults, it's going to be great for our teens, the link to this show, the Youth Room, the link to the Youth Room is going to be in the show notes. So all you're going to have to do is just hold your thumb over that link, copy and paste that show, and throw it in your text blast, your social media blast, and get this resource into the hands of your students and your young adults. Well, Daniel, Jordan, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Great insight, great feedback for all of our leaders, and you guys are doing an awesome job with the Youth Room, and it was a pleasure to have you on the show. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Youth Room, a podcast from UPCI Youth Ministries for students and young adults. Every month, Daniel and Jordan hang out and talk about things relevant to you as an apostolic young person. If you like what you hear, please consider following and subscribing to the show. P.S. We want your feedback. Visit anchor.fm/theyouthroomym to connect with us on social media and send us a voice message if you have a question or topic that we should address in the future.
Welcome back. Here we are another week in the Youth Room, and we're talking about how our relationships shape us. What do we mean by relationships? You know, we're not just talking about romantic relationships. I know that's probably the first thing that comes to mind at the, you know, in those teenage years. When we say the word relationships, you're thinking, obviously they're talking about him and her romance, but no. That's not what this is about. That's not this episode. Maybe one day, but not this week in the Youth Room. We're talking about, not today. We're talking about friendships. We're talking about the interactions and connections that you have with the people around you, the people that are closest to you, that are most important to you, the ones you look up to, the ones you trust, the ones you, take advice from and give advice to. Your most important relationship, obviously, is with Christ. But in this episode, we want to focus on your connections to the people around you. We believe that this is a really important topic. And so we want to answer the question of why. Why are relationships so important to talk about? The people around you matter, sometimes more than you might think. Relationships ultimately are going to be the biggest factor in determining the direction of your life. They can be life-giving or they can be draining. The right relationships will help you grow and mature. They'll make you better, whereas the wrong relationships can hurt you and cause you stress and pain.
Yeah, and the reason we're talking about this, like Jordan said, the biggest relationship is your relationship with God, but you know, sometimes that relationship is almost separate from every other one, in that we know how to cultivate that relationship with God, but we're dealing with all kinds of different people. And we don't have a book about their, you know, their personalities and their likes and dislikes. Whereas with God, we can understand him and we talk to him and build this relationship. But then out of an outflow of that relationship, how does that impact all of our other relationships? And how do those relationships now impact our relationship with God and what we're trying to do for God? And so when we talk about relationships, we're talking about your connections to people that are going to help you or be a negative kind of drain on you spiritually. And so we want to highlight some of those positive relationships and some of the negative ones and really focus on what the Bible says about them, what the Bible says about different kinds of relationships. And so oftentimes in the Bible, when it talks about relationships, it pairs both of them together. So it'll talk about the positive aspect of a particular type of relationship, and right along with it, it will emphasize the negative. And it does that to kind of show us that there really are these two types, and we should be trying to focus on developing more and more positive relationships. So for example, before we get into them, Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20 says, "Walk with the wise and become wise." And then it says, "For a companion of fools suffers harm." And so if you think about your buddies at high school or work or elementary school, the people that you're hanging out with, if they're, you know, smart, well put together people, they've got their head on straight and they're making good decisions,
then they're going to help you continue to make good decisions. If your buddies are the people who are always going off the rails, they're always, you know, how much can we get away with? Then you're gonna start to feel that pressure to go along with that. And so that's what that verse is talking about. Just that it's really important to think about who we're developing relationships with and how those relationships are influencing us and our actions and our behavior and just the type of people that we're becoming.
Yeah, there's another verse that we look to sometimes when we're talking about relationships, and that's 1 Corinthians 15:33. It says, "Do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character." And I like the first half of that where it says, "Do not be misled," because I think a lot of times it's easy for us to think, oh, like, it's not a big deal. I just hang out with these people sometimes. I'm not with them all the time. Or, you know, I just see them at school, or I just see them on the weekend. And we can kind of trick ourselves into thinking that the people we hang out with don't really matter. We're our own person, right? Like, we're separate from them. And so who they are isn't who I am. But ultimately, the Bible says bad company corrupts good character. So you might say, I have good character, you know, it's okay if I keep some sketchy company, but the Bible says otherwise, right? It says bad company corrupts good character. And this takes place over time, right? You might not notice the changes at first, they might be subtle, but eventually you're going to be doing things that you didn't anticipate doing a year ago, or, you know, even just a few months ago. Bad company corrupts good characters. And so, you know, there's some obvious relationships that we could avoid. Dan, do you want to talk about some of those?
Yeah, the tricky part, I think, of it is if you weren't born in the church, if you come to God maybe later in life, like maybe you're a teen or you're a young adult and you've just started going to church, you're just starting to develop your relationship with God, the friends that you had before might not be the best friends for you now. Right? They might not be embodying the lifestyle that you are now embracing. And so there is this tension of what God wants for my life and the people that are in my life and how they're impacting, you know, what God is trying to do in me. And so that's something to consider when we talk about these relationships, is that they might be, part of how you used to live your life. And now you really want to be a positive influence. You want to help them see kind of the change that you're beginning to develop and how God is impacting your life. And so you don't want to just kind of cut people out entirely. And so as we talk about these maybe more negative relationships, don't just say, well, okay, you know, I'm never going to text that person again. I'm never going to wish him happy birthday, or, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. Like, we're Christians and trying to reach the world. And so you might identify someone now as maybe not the best influence in your life. And so maybe it's more about just limiting how much they're able to influence you, and thinking about, you know, when are we together? How much time are we spending together? How open am I to, you know, following after their lead, kind of thing? And just kind of being more safe when it comes to people who, you know, as Jordan said, that bad company that has the potential to corrupt your good character. And so one of the relationships, or one of the types of people to avoid, is simply people who tempt you to live or to embrace an ungodly lifestyle. And so these are people who might be more fanatical about certain things. Like, they're just super fans of stuff. And if you're not into the thing that they're into, you know, you're weird, or they don't know how to have a conversation with you. And so they're always kind of pushing a particular lifestyle, right? It might be a partying lifestyle. It might be certain types of media that they are, you know, watching, and things like that you feel uncomfortable with, or that you know are not, you know, pleasing to God. And so you're avoiding them. And so if you feel like when you're with them, you are tempted towards that ungodly lifestyle, you feel like you're about to say yes, or that you might slip into something that maybe you've struggled with before, or maybe that God brought you out of, you really do need to, and when we say avoid, I think, you know, you need to limit the scenarios where you're with that person, and that's a likely thing that they're going to want to go and do that, or that they're going to now invite you to that, and there's no easy way for you to get out of it. And so that is one of those relationships that I think we want to try and avoid, is those who tempt us towards an ungodly lifestyle.
Yeah, for sure.
Jordan, do you want to tackle another one?
Yeah. I would say that one that comes to mind is someone who is kind of like in your corner when you're doubting God, or when you're, you know, frustrated with your circumstances, right, and they're there like backing you up, and it feels good because they're like, you know, your shoulder to cry on, so to speak. And they're like, you know, giving you all this advice on how you should deal with your problems. But ultimately, they're not a godly strength to you. They're just reinforcing some of the frustrations and some of the doubts and some of the concerns you're having as you're struggling with your faith. And that a person who either supports you in that, or who even causes that frustration and that doubt, is a person who you want to avoid, right? When you're struggling with your faith, or when you're frustrated with God or with circumstances that you're going through, you need someone who can strengthen your faith, right? And we're going to talk about positive relationships in a moment, but I just on the negative side would say that someone who's going to cause you doubt, or going to kind of echo your doubts or echo your frustrations, while it might feel good in the moment, it's not someone that you want to surround yourself with regularly.
Yeah, I think that is huge, because who else do we turn to, right? When we're struggling, or we have questions, or we're not sure about something, we turn to our friends. That's instinctively who we look to first, because we've developed a relationship. They know us and we know them, and we trust them because we've gone through some things together. But if in those moments they're kind of doubling down on your doubts and your questions, and they're kind of trying to draw you away from God, then yeah, that's not the right person to turn to. I think another one similar to that is someone who's constantly criticizing what God is doing in your life. So rather than celebrating how much God is changing your life and the positive things that are coming out of that, they're criticizing it, right? It's, you know, I think of that person who's like, well, you're no fun anymore, right? You don't do the things that you used to do. Like, you're spending all your time at church, and just every decision, everything that you feel like you're doing good and is making you feel better, and it's helping you experience God's presence in a new and profound way in your life, and God's making you a better person. All those decisions you're making and choices you're making, they're the first one to say, yeah, but it's taking away from this, or it's changing this aspect of who you are. And so that's someone that obviously doesn't have your back with what God is doing. And I think, you know, you can have friends who aren't Christians, and they'll look at you and be like, you've changed your life. You know, you're a better person. Like, you're nicer to be around. Like, you're maybe more fun than you were before, even though they're not a Christian, even though they don't believe the same thing, because that's just how powerful what God is doing in your life. And so find those kinds of friends and keep those friends with you, that even though they don't fully believe what you're believing and what you're choosing to live out, they're at least going to support you and celebrate what God is doing in your life. There's so many examples in the Bible of some negative relationships. Like, you've got Samson and Delilah for a more romantic relationship. That's a really positive one. You have Rehoboam, who was a young king, and he kind of took over after Solomon, and he had some bad friends who really just told him what he wanted to hear, and it led to some massive consequences for Israel. You have Amnon. There's a famous sermon about that. You know, Amnon had a friend, and Amnon's friend led him down a really bad path, and it's just all these influences. It's the wrong person, right, at the wrong time, and they say something that just, it captures your heart, or it gets your attention because they have influence in your life, and it can cause you to make really big mistakes. And so by pointing these three relationships out to you, those who will lead you towards an ungodly lifestyle, those who will cause you to doubt, and those who are criticizing what God is doing in your life, we hope that you can identify those and start to avoid them and limit them, and turn towards and lean into some more positive relationships that Jordan's going to tell us about right now. Aren't you, Jordan?
All right. I guess so. So we kind of hinted at this a few minutes ago. We said that, you know, positive relationships strengthen your faith. And the Bible speaks to this. It says in Hebrews 10, 24 and 25, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. This is the sort of attitude and approach that we as Christians, as apostolics, need to have toward our relationships with others. We need to be looking for ways to encourage one another. And that's what a good friend does. If you're asking yourself, you know, what's a good friend look like? Who's a good friend? How do I know if someone's a good friend? If they're looking for ways to encourage you, if they're, you know, going out of their way to encourage you on the path that God's called you to, that's a good friend, right? And the scripture talks about doing this all the more as you see the day approaching. That phrase, the day, it's referring to the day of the Lord, or the time when Jesus will return for his church. And the Bible talks about how, you know, when that time approaches, the world's going to become a darker place, right? There's going to be wars and rumors of wars and famines and sickness. And we're seeing a lot of darkness in our world today. And so the Bible says in response to that, we shouldn't, you know, close ourselves off and become more secluded and more isolated, but instead we need to step out and encourage one another even more than we have in the past. 1 Thessalonians 5:11, kind of in, continuing this vein, it says, therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. The Thessalonians understood this, right? They knew what it meant to be a good friend, to have strong relationships in the church.
Yeah, we all, I think, especially if you're coming into the church, or, you know, you're from a smaller church, it's really important that you start to think about, you know, who do I have in my life that's my age, that is a good friend or a best friend that's encouraging me spiritually? Do I have anyone like that? And if you don't, you need to find someone. If you're from a very small church, and maybe, you know, you've tried a few times to make friends with the people around you and it's just not a natural fit, you've got to reach outside that. You attend district events, you attend national events, you go on social media, and you try and find somebody with some interests. And you have God in common, and you build a relationship where you can encourage one another and you can strengthen one another, so that you can kind of replace what you maybe had with more of a negative influence, where you had a really close friend who was always there for you, always supportive, but now they're not doing it in the same way because your lifestyle has changed, or just because you're a Christian, you need a Christian friend, you need a godly friend. And so that's kind of the first positive relationship, like-minded, godly peers your own age. The second type of positive relationship, unless Jordan, you had something that you wanted to add to that before I move on.
No, you're good. I'll come back around later. We can talk about some practical tips.
Yeah, sounds good. The other one, I think, just maybe is looking at your own spiritual growth. And so this would be someone who will challenge you. So not just a peer that is kind of your same age and at the same station in life, but a mentor. And so that can be formal, that can be informal. But really what we mean is somebody older than you, someone who has a little bit more life experience that you admire and you respect, not because of how much money they make, not because of their career or what kind of, you know, car they drive, or not because of any of those things, but because of who they are as a child of God. They're faithful, they're strong in the faith, they're active in ministry, you know, something that you can look up to and say, that's what I want to have. When I'm their age, I want to be where they are. And so finding someone like that, that you can either, you know, kind of follow from a distance, or you can reach out to them, or you can meet on an ongoing basis, and they can just speak into your life, and you can allow them to speak into your life and share some of the things that they're doing, that they've done, that they've learned from. I think that's really important because it gives you something to aspire to. It lets you know that, you know, when you're struggling, like, that's normal. We've all been there. And they're just, you know, a little bit further down that journey. And so outside of just finding someone at your own level, a peer, try and find a mentor that can really help you to grow spiritually.
For sure. I think that's so important. I would say in my own life that having a mentor was probably one of the largest factors in shaping me as I, you know, grew from teenage years into young adulthood. Like, that, those formative years, I was really shaped by the mentors that I had around me. The whole title of this episode, right? The idea that our relationships shape us. This is where it really gets important, is when you start to intentionally choose people to surround yourself with, right? Like-minded godly peers, but then mentors who are where you want to be, right? If you look at them and you say, I want to be there one day, well, they've gone that road before you. And so they'll be able to teach you and to direct you and to give you instruction that's going to ensure that you are headed in that direction, right?
Yeah. And there was a scripture that came to mind, and I promise that this will fit here. James chapter 5, verse 20, James says, remember this, whoever turns a sinner from the error of their ways will save them from death and cover over a multitude of sins. And to me, what's so impactful about that is that James is writing to believers in the church. And he's just saying, you know, if we turn sinners away from the error of their ways, because we're all really sinners, like we mess up all the time. And we need sometimes some people to point out the error of our ways. And so we need a relationship, someone who can speak into our life and say, you know, here's a blind spot, here's a road that you're going down, and they turn us back, and it will help cover a multitude of sins and save them from death. And so a mentor is a really good person who's able to do that. And then I think the next step from this is to recognize that you have the ability to pour into someone else's life. So just as you're looking up for somebody that, you know, you can look up to, you should also be looking kind of behind you, maybe is not the right word, but somebody who's a little bit younger than you that might be looking to you, you know, that young person in the church that's, you know, 4 or 5 years younger, and maybe you're one of the only, you know, young guys or young ladies in your church that they can look up to. You're an example to them, whether you like it or not. And if you will lean into that and you will embrace that responsibility of helping them to grow in the faith by connecting with them, by, you know, leading by example in service, by talking to them about opportunities to get involved, or, you know, just things that are going on in your life, that it will help you grow leaps and bounds, because you will recognize that your life isn't just about you and what you want, but that you begin serving, you begin pouring into others, and it will kind of help you to rise to another level spiritually. And so, you know, that's a little bit of a challenge, right? To kind of take that on and say, you know, how can I be a good godly example to other young people, or to, you know, even younger people than myself?
For sure.
And then the last one, there's a last big one.
Yeah. We talked when we were talking about negative relationships about, you know, when you're struggling, when you're doubting, when you're in a tense situation in life, or you're frustrated, you know, don't just go to the person who's going to be your support in that and just say, you know, kind of let you lean into your doubt or lean into your frustration, who might lead you to further from God. Well, one of the flip sides of that, one of the counters to that, is having someone you can go to in the worst times in your life, someone who you can be totally open and honest with, who you know is not going to judge you, who you know is going to have your best interests in mind. And in my own life, that person has been my pastor. And I believe that your pastor wants to be there for you in those times in your life. Years and years ago, when I was about 17, 18, my parents were going through a divorce, and my mom, she drove it home for me, my brother, and my sister that we had to be close with our pastors. She made it so that on a regular basis, we were setting aside time to go and meet with our pastors. I met with Adam Shaw. He was my youth pastor at the time. I met with him on a regular basis just to hang out, just to talk. We would go to the church and we would, you know, do some things around the church, whether it was cleaning up or working on a creative project, just different things to kind of put us in the same space at the same time. But through that, I built a relationship with him in one of the most difficult times of my life. And it gave me space to talk. It gave me, you know, someone who was going to be a good strength to me in that season. And I think it's a result of that relationship that I am where I am today, and that season didn't destroy my faith or destroy my walk with God. Mm-hmm. So I say all that pastors, to say you need a pastor.
You need a pastor. Yeah. Pastors are, they're in a special position, a God-appointed position. There's a reason that we have them. There's a couple scriptures I just want to read before we kind of start to wrap up this episode. But Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 15 says, "Then I will give you shepherds after my own heart." This is God speaking. And he says, "Who will lead you with knowledge and understanding." You know, pastors are studying, and they see people, you know, from all over, go through all kinds of things. They're there with them in the best of moments and the worst, you know, trials of their life. And they see how different people handle them and how people respond to them and what is important in those moments. And so when you go to them, you're probably not surprising them with whatever it is that you're dealing with. They've probably seen that before, and they've seen people go through that in a positive way, and they've seen people maybe even leave the church as a result of that. And so they're going to be able to speak to your situation and give you direction and advice that will, you know, help you kind of move through things in the best way possible. And so it's really, really important, especially in those low and trying times. The other verse is Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17. It says, have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority. And that's really hard as young people to submit to anyone's authority. You know, when your mom or dad says, clean your room, you rebel with everything inside of you. You sweep everything under the bed and like, I'll do it later. Or I'm too busy, whatever, right? We struggle with submission, but here we have a biblical command, right? To have confidence in our leaders and to submit to their authority. And here's why, because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. That is their responsibility to give an account of how they have counseled you and have how they have led you and what they have done to help you. And so they're very mindful of what you're doing, and they want the opportunity to help you. And the end of that verse says, do this so that their work will be a joy and not a burden, for that would be of no benefit to you. And so our job in this relationship is to have confidence in them, to go to them, to make their life easy. You know, before you make the big decision, talk to them first. It's really, really hard for a pastor.
Amen.
If you make the decision first and then you say, hey, pastor, I've decided to start dating this person, or I've decided to go to this post-secondary school, what do you think about that? You know, I've already paid the tuition. I've already asked them about, what do you think about that? It puts them in a really awkward spot, a really tough spot. But if you go to them first and say, hey, I'm thinking about this person. Do you know anything? You know, maybe they're from another church. Can you ask their pastor if they know anything? Like they want to do everything they can to help you. And so before you make big life-changing decisions, especially as a young person, talk to your pastor. Just put it in their ear. Say, you know, pray about it. Do you have any wisdom for me? And I know that that will cause you as a saint, you will be a joy for them. They'll be like, I need a million other saints in my church like this young person, because they're not a burden, right? They're not making those mistakes. They're allowing me to speak into their life first. And so that's a really big challenge to open up to your pastor, talk to your pastor, have faith in your pastor, and just let them lead you the way that God has empowered them to do.
Yeah. And just kind of as we close here, I want to talk about a couple practical points. Early on, when we talked about negative relationships, we said that you need to insulate yourselves, right? We were kind of echoing what we said last week when we talked about how we're trying to reach the world, but we need to put up some boundaries, put some kind of guidelines in place to help us navigate those relationships with people who are outside of the church, outside of the faith. Yes, we want to reach them, but we want to be the influencers there and not allow their lifestyle and their ways to influence our walk with God. But on the flip side, with positive relationships, the first thing we would say is that your relationships are not set in stone. So if you're here, you know, listening to this, hearing all the benefits of good relationships and thinking, well, I've got nobody, you know, there's nobody for me to talk to. Well, realize that the pool of people is larger than you think. Yeah, there's at least two people who will be your friend. No, but in all honesty, right, start using social media, use technology to connect with people. Go on the youth ministry's Instagram page, look at who's commenting on the latest posts, and just send some DMs. Or I know in our district, we've got a district P7 call or a district youth call, right? And maybe your district or a neighboring district nearby has a Zoom call like that that you could start joining on a weekly or monthly basis, where you could just meet a few more people who are around your age and have their eyes set on living a life that's pleasing to God.
Yeah. And really what we're talking about is these relationships matter. We all need someone. We're all connected to someone. And so it's important that we recognize what those connections are doing to us and how they're shaping us. The book of Ecclesiastes says that two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. And the point it goes on to make is that if one person falls down, that the other can help them up. And it's a pity for anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. This is about working out our salvation with fear and trembling. This is about securing our relationship with God, finding and strengthening these positive relationships so that if anything happens, when chaos comes into our life, when things start to disrupt the normal thing and we're just not where we should be spiritually, we need positive relationships will help us draw closer to God. You know, David had Jonathan. Jonathan was such a good friend to him. You know, even Daniel, when he was going through everything he was going through and standing up to King Nebuchadnezzar, right? He had Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Even Jesus had Lazarus and John, as John likes to say, the disciple whom Jesus loved. But he had these close friends. He had close earthly relationships. Did he need them as much as we did? I don't know. He's God in flesh, but he still had the same temptations. He still went to the same old things. And so I'm sure he would reach out in those times. And it was good to have a comforting soul, someone who was not going to abandon him, somebody who was not going to turn his back on him, or it wasn't a question of, does this person support me? Just knowing that they did would alleviate so much of that pressure. And so if they all had friends, we've got to have good, godly, spiritual friends.
Absolutely. The last thing I would say is just, you know, if there's someone around you that you think might make a good friend, don't waste time. Don't take that opportunity for granted. Reach out, strike up a conversation, try to make time for someone and just start building that relationship and you will find a friend. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Youth Room. We're excited to see you next time.